Production funding for Behind the Headlines is made possible in part by the WKNO Production Fund, the WKNO Endowment Fund, and by viewers like you. Thank you.
MATA and what's next for public transportation in Memphis. Tonight on Behind the Headlines. I'm Eric Barnes with the Daily Memphian. Thanks for joining us. I am joined tonight by CEO Gary Rosenfeld from MATA. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Along with Bill Drees, reporter with the Daily Memphian. So let's start really big picture for a second, and then we'll get down into the weeds and into to the short-term goals and the long-term goals. But I know we'll talk about the what I think it's called the transit vision, and it's a $30 million increase that you are pursuing to expand service. But let's take that off the table just for a second. And for a largely bus-based service in a city the size of Memphis, if you had, I mean, what would it look like? What would your dream system be? Let's take light rail out and all that kind of thing. But just thinking about what would it be like if you really could have a service that would appeal to so many people? How many buses, and would it be frequency? Would it be the number of routes? What were those elements that you would really pursue?
Thanks for the question. Every good transit system, its base is a good bus network. So you're right, the bus network comes first and then other things come after that. But high frequency service is the key to success in public transportation. People shouldn't pay a penalty of time in order to use public transportation. And the goal should be to improve mobility, to reduce congestion, to improve access for people to jobs, education, healthcare, recreation, and be able to connect all of our different parts of our community together so that there's seamless mobility throughout the community.
So if you look at sort of the best practices in the industry, and before you've been in Memphis for 2 years, coming up on 2 years as CEO, and ran the Yosemite National Park system before that. Mm-hmm. So you have a lot of experience in this. So if you looked at it and you said, I have not unlimited funds, but a lot more funds than you have now, would it be a doubling of the frequencies? Would it be a doubling of the routes? I mean, Memphis is a geographically huge city. And so, I mean, for best practices of frequency and of how far people have to walk or travel to get to a bus stop, I mean, are we halfway there? Are we a third of the way there?
I'd probably say we're, to get from where we're at to good transportation service, that's covered under the transit vision.
Yeah, which we'll
talk about. To get to great transportation service, you build on the successes of that plan and get to and move towards great. Is there additional funding required to get there? Yes, but one of the pieces of the equation that we need to look at for the future is a dedicated funding source that allows MATA to grow by design, as compared to being subject to general fund funding coming from either the city, which we're very appreciative for, or the county, or some other firm.
A dedicated funding source would be what? And in other cities is what?
Many communities had, there's a whole list of ways to attain it, whether it be sales tax initiatives, whether it be utility taxes, whether it be a separate line item on property tax, but just a dedicated funding source so that the agency knows that it can rely on its funding over a long period of time. Putting together initiatives in transportation are expensive, so running demonstration projects are good. They're good to help us prove a concept, but they're very expensive to produce. So when we can set them up to have dedicated funding, it removes some of the risk, and when you reduce the risk, the cost naturally goes down.
Let's bring Bill in.
So do the pilot programs come before you go for a dedicated revenue source, or how does the timing of that work? Because we've heard about a dedicated revenue source for quite some time. Where do you think we are in terms of actually having a proposal that might go on the ballot for that?
We're close. Certainly it's not going to be this next election cycle, but probably in the very near future after this election cycle, I think we could see a move towards a dedicated funding cycle. But the first part of your question, The way we fund demonstration projects is by seeking grants to provide them. For example, we just submitted a grant just this week for on-demand type style transportation program to serve the Westwood, Boxwood area because it produces low ridership on a route that's difficult to deliver high frequency service. So if we change the dynamics of that route, we can actually potentially save some money and improve service all at the same time.
What does on-demand mean? How does that differ from conventional bus service?
To be determined in terms of its true definition for this area, mm-hmm. but a system that works on-demand, a passenger could either use a call center or an application to order a pickup at a given address and a destination to be within a zone or the destination to be part of the bus network so that then they can expand their opportunity. So it allows us to overcome some safety issues, some path of travel issues for some neighborhoods, get people to the bus network, and then they can continue their trip that way.
So it's door-to-door?
It could be door-to-door, zone-to-zone. That's still up for design. We met with the community, got their input a few weeks ago. It was a great meeting, a lot of good participation from community leaders, but it's yet to be, the final product is yet to be designed.
You mentioned the transit vision. That is, I asked you for sort of a pie in the sky take on where we are with public transportation. The transit vision is a $30 million ask. You got, I think, $30 million more every year in spending. What would that $30 million do for Memphis and the public?
It would give access to jobs an increase by about 39%. It would improve the overall general mobility of our community so that you could get from any point to any point in an hour or less, about 90% of the time. So today, unfortunately, we have commuters that commute 2.5 hours each way. And when we ask people to utilize services like that for lower income wage, sort of a double whammy, if you will, because commuting that long usually puts things like childcare into penalty situations where people are paying.
It just gets
exponentially more expensive for this person to take advantage of a job opportunity. So we need to reduce that commute time to something that the three of us might experience, for the vast majority of people. And then if people choose to live out and about and they have to be over an hour, that becomes a choice rather than a rule.
And you got an increase of, was it $5 million this year? Or $2.5 million.
We continue to see increases in our funding from the city, which is great. Mayor Strickland has been out in the forefront of adding money to MATA and capital projects in MATA during his time here. The county this year has put a line item in their capital budget for $2.5 million, and we're still in the process of working out the details of the rules of that money.
Well, yeah, I was reading a story we did. Commissioner Ford, I want to call him Councilman Ford, former Councilman Ford, now Commissioner Edwin Ford, said that they would like to have two seats on the board of MATA, and they would like MATA to come up with a plan for suburban service as a kind of condition on that $2.5 million. Is that a fair summary of what they said to you?
Yeah, that's fair summary.
And is that your call to put those seats on the board, or that's actually the city of Memphis's call to expand the number of seats?
Well, the transit authority is set up by has its own bylaws, and there's a statute that guide how that works. But it will be a collaborative effort between the city, the mayor's office, and the MATA board in terms of what changes are made to the bylaws that will either enable the opportunity for county representation or define how that might look.
And what suburban service right now, I mean, outside the city limits, there are how many stops, give or take, and routes outside the city of Memphis?
Well, the routes that serve Germantown, for example, there's routes that serve Bartlett, Cordova, and some other parts of the city that are not in the city core, if you will. The primary ridership for those services come from the city. So it's people going to those areas as compared to people coming from those areas.
Gotcha.
Primarily revolving around jobs if you will. So those are good things. Suburban services, though, have to potentially generate the adequate ridership to warrant the service. So it's not just a quick okay, we're going to send a bus out to a particular neighborhood if there's nothing in the neighborhood that would indicate that ridership will be there.
Right. And this is, I imagine, the quandary of all public transportation choices, particularly in a city with the geographic footprint of Memphis. $2.5 million is a lot of money by any standard. But yes, once you put, if you say you're going to, build a lot of point-to-point systems in the suburbs that aren't really generating a lot of ridership, so they're money losing. I mean, you're almost wasting, quote unquote, that $2.5 million, right?
It's not money losing. What you have to do at that point is you have to define what success looks like.
Okay.
Okay. I could, if ridership is an important key factor that we're going to look at, then yes, you design routes to meet ridership goals. If the coverage is what you are looking at, then you design routes that cover the entire area. Then within the given budget, you either operate at at whatever frequency you can. The transit vision and the process that we use to get the transit vision produced had community input, and the community spoke loudly and said, frequency is the key to success, and we want to improve frequency. Today, our resources are dedicated about 60% coverage, 40% towards frequency. The transit vision shifts that to about 70% frequency and 30% coverage. So we see a big improvement on the core routes and the frequency on those core routes. We still serve the outer areas, but probably at less frequency than what they see today.
When you say coverage, and then I'll go to Bill, but just coverage, imagine there's somebody out there thinking, well, wait, why would you have coverage in an area where you don't have ridership, that doesn't have ridership, when you just pull that coverage from there? Or is it you've got to have coverage and see if ridership builds? I mean, what's the
Both. Okay. A little bit of both. There are parts of our community that have people that are transit dependent, that live in remote parts of our community. They have the same aspirations as everybody else. So we do our best to cover those areas, if you will, and hopefully they will utilize the service. But again, if utilizing the service means that they're commuting 5 or 6 hours total for the day, it puts things into a different perspective. But if we can improve the frequency of service to the points where they transfer into the major parts of the bus network, the amount of time they spend commuting drops drastically. Because if you're spending 2 hours commuting, I bet you there's an hour of waiting time in the middle of that.
Yeah, yeah. Go to Bill with 15 minutes.
Your transit vision plan was out there in 2017, so about 2 years. Has the dollar figure changed on it that time? Have some aspects of it changed?
The transit vision was based on our cost structure at that time. So naturally, wages go up, operating costs go up, and such. So it's fair to say that $30 million in 2017 dollars, yes.
All right. We continue to see last mile services come into the area. How does that affect what Matt is trying to do? Uber, Lyft, things like that.
I think that the shared network services, which is what those things are called, are an important part in the overall mobility discussion. I think that they have a role in that. Our typical rider profile is not utilizing Uber and Lyft. And within the bus industry, if you will, the transit industry across the country, we're seeing more correlations with reductions in service and reductions in ridership than we are with increases in shared network services and reduction in ridership. Because there are very few communities out there that are serving a portion of the population that are going to choose a $15, $20, or $30 option to their $4 bus ride. That's just not really there. Now, some people choose to share an Uber or a Lyft or a shared network service and help reduce their costs that way. But The thing of it is, and it was just in the news this morning, as a matter of fact, that Uber and Lyft admit that they create congestion in a community. So by it's still, for the most part, a single person in a single vehicle creating congestion. Well, congestion slows everything down. When you slow everything down, it extends the amount of time people are on the bus and everything else. Mm-hmm. The thing to keep in mind is public transit, especially here in Memphis, we operate typically about 25 to 28 passengers per hour of service on a bus. There isn't an Uber car out there that could even come close to that. Uber, based on our demand response services, the best they're going to see is 2 passengers per hour. So you get an idea of the scope of what you would need to have in place in order to have that as a viable option for transit passengers.
The reason I bring that up is a few weeks back we had Kevin Kane on from Memphis Tourism, mm-hmm. and we asked him about the impact of that, and he said, yeah, for domestic visitors and tourists, they tend to use Uber and Lyft, but international tourists, folks who come here from other countries, tend not to. They're looking for the public transportation options. Does that mirror what you see with what is admittedly a very select part of the possible market?
Certainly, international destinations from Memphis or international destinations coming to Memphis, yes, they're looking for public transportation. Because when you go to any of the great cities around the world, great countries around the world that have high levels of tourism, export high levels of tourism, they have great transit systems. Even domestically, if you have visitors that come here from New York, for example, they're looking for public transportation. Chicago, they're looking for public transportation because these features are ingrained in those communities. They're a key factor in everything that the community does. And they're major economic drivers in those communities as well. MATA has the same ability to be we are an economic driver. Just on the movement of our passengers between communities and moving the wages that they earn around our community has a major impact on the economic activity in communities.
You mentioned New York, Chicago, but just in New York, which obviously has a massive and extensive subway system and bus system and so on. Seattle has put in a massive amount of infrastructure in terms of buses and now light rail. A lot of that money comes from the state, so the state of Washington or the state of New York. It's not all funded by the city of Memphis or the city of Seattle. In Tennessee, the Tennessee legislature has not exactly been as pro public transportation as other states. I would start there. How much funding do you get from the state, and how much more would you like to see?
Well, I'd like to. It's never enough.
I know, I set you up.
The state is a good stakeholder in MATA. They provide us with probably close to 10% of our revenues. They're a good partner. Yes, I think that the opportunities have grown since the passing of the IMPROVE Act. There have been a couple of years now of capital funds becoming available.
Which is an increase in the gas tax.
Increase in the gas tax, lowering, which corresponded with a lowering of the sales tax.
Yeah.
And we've got a security camera program that's going on right now. It's in the process. Collision avoidance program that's coming online. So through grant applications. So the state is stepping up. We would love to see the state step up with more operating funds. We need operating assistance to be able to put more direct service in the street. It's nice to have things, but if you can't maintain them or if we don't have the operators behind the wheel, we can't provide the service.
Did I read that you got a TDOT grant or some funding for $20 million in electric buses? Did I read that grant?
The CMAQ grant.
CMAQ,
Congestion Mitigation Air Quality Improvement.
So was that federal money or was that state money?
It's a combination. They're both in that arena, and that will move us into the electric bus market in the probably next year. We'll probably see movement in that. But that provides for the infrastructure upgrades necessary to have 10 electric buses and the charging network necessary for them.
And this is not Seattle, some cities you see where they have the wires above the streets.
Well, that decision hasn't been made in terms of are they going to be battery electric or hydrogen electric or just what.
Okay.
We're going through the engineering process right now. But Seattle has many different programs ranging from catenary system, which is similar to the way our trolley system operates, to battery electric systems, and they have a wide variety of different capital programs in their system.
You mentioned capital programs and maintenance that sort of inevitably leads to the trolley service downtown, which was shut down before you were in, I think, in your position.
Correct.
There'd been a couple fires, and it came out afterward that there had not been near enough maintenance on the system, but particularly the cars, the trolley cars. It's back up the Main Street. There must be four or five,
Main,
six.
Main Street is back online. It's been online for a little over a year now.
What is
very successful.
Okay, so it's fine. Does it pay for itself?
No.
No.
No. Again, there isn't. Transit is not able to pay for itself. Yeah. That's why public transit was created in 1964, because all of the private companies that were providing it were going out of business and not serving. So the U.S. government stepped in with the Urban Mass Transit Act in 1964, and the rest is history. And now we have the FTA. That has grown into the FTA today.
But are there any transit systems in the country that pay for themselves?
No.
In city level, yeah.
No.
But back to the trolleys. When the Riverfront Loop, is there a timeline for that to be back in operation?
We're working on that. There's still a lot of engineering to be done. There's still a lot of vehicle refurbishment that has to occur before then. Unfortunately, there are very few vendors that play in that arena. So getting in line sometimes is a multi-year process from a delivery standpoint.
So. I did see, though, just being downtown, that on the Riverfront Loop, at least one, if not two, new trolley stops have gone in. So you have some confidence. I don't know if you build those or the city builds those.
Those are there's one that was part of the CMAQ project at Central Station that will serve the Riverfront Loop. And then there's one on Main Street, which is the terminating point for the Main Street line at South Main. And those were part of that group.
So no timeline. I'm pressing you a little bit here. No timeline on the Riverfront
Loop. I would love to give you a date, but I'd be guessing. The issue today is that we have a shortage in the vendor network that for people that refurbish trolley cars. Our trolley cars and are in cases are as much as 100 years old, and our recertification process that we developed to reopen the Main Street has very strict rules as to what has to happen to a car before it goes back into service and the testing required. If we had two or three more vendors in that arena with more competition, we might not see 2 or 3 year backlogs within the budgetary range.
So it really could be 2 or 3 years before?
I would say that's at the outside.
Yes. Okay. Bill, 4 minutes left.
Let's talk about frequency and coverage. Go back to kind of the balance of that on the bus system. You can have an idea of what that balance ought to look like. I think you mentioned like a 70-30
what the transit vision calls
for. The transit vision says. Could that change during the political process, though? Because what I'm foreseeing is a city council member or a county commissioner saying, we're providing this funding and this is not in your plan and I want to see coverage in this area of my district. Could you see that kind of pressure to do that?
I could see that kind of request. I would hope that people take the time to review our transit vision plan recognize the level of community input that was involved in putting together that plan, and respect that the plan. If you want to fund that above and beyond the funding for the plan, happy to consider it. But I have a duty as a public administrator to effectively utilize public tax dollars, and so I'm always looking for the most efficient way to deliver service, and so efficiency is very important. And be happy to talk to anybody that might be, considering such a thing to provide them with the background information, just so that they are making an informed decision when they make a request like that.
And one of the most important considerations, I think, in what you do is how many people who ride the bus system now who don't have any other way to get where they need to go or much less where they want to go. What is that number?
You caught me, Bill. I don't know the number off the top of my head, but I know that it's a large number.
Okay.
It's well more than 50% of our ridership does not have another form of transportation to utilize. And a larger percentage of our ridership is a one-car family. So that it, you know, when you mix one car in a family and no cars in a family, you see a lot of dependency on the public transit network, and that's what's important.
Annual ridership is give or take
about 6 million.
Okay. Really briefly, you talked about a dedicated funder source, which would take a referendum. Would that be something that the MATA organization, the MATA board, would initiate? Does that go through city council? How would that process take place?
The process would be up to elected officials to determine how that works. We would take recommendations to those governing bodies.
Okay, and briefly, just with 30 seconds left here, the program to expand free access for 3,000 high school students and their parents. Talk a little bit about that.
A great collaboration with Shelby County Schools and MATA. We have come to an agreement on a contract where we'll provide 3,000 bus passes for high school age children that meet certain criteria, income criteria. And these will be unlimited bus passes. They'll be able to use the bus any time of day, 7 days a week, any time that the network is operating, they'll be able to use it. The interesting facet to this program is we will also provide bus passes to any of the registered guardians of those children. So if mom and dad are on the student's registration card and they want a bus pass too, they get it as part of this program.
All right. I'm going to cut you off there. It's okay. A great program. We wrote about it on the site. Thank you for being here. Thank you, Bill. And thank you for joining us. Next week, Tammy Sawyer, candidate for mayor.